good to be here. We've never been in this particular congregation. We used to live in Alabama, Birmingham area, and we traveled around a good bit through the years, but we never were here. Appreciate the opportunity to speak before you this morning. The New Testament tells us that the Old Testament is there for our learning, our admonition, our examples, and so forth. And we are going to study some information out of the book of Genesis this morning. The lesson is not intended to teach you how to become a Christian. It's not intended to teach you how to stay a Christian, but it's to learn about something that occurred in the Old Testament many years ago and see what we can gather from that. I think probably every adult and most of the children are familiar with the story of Joseph. How his father loved him because he was a child in his old age. How he gave him a coat of many colors and his brothers were jealous of him. Partly because of the coat, partly because of the affection his father openly showed him. And we're also familiar how he was sold into slavery, into Egypt, and how that all came about. We're going to study that story and try to answer three different questions. The Bible is very concise. It doesn't tell us everything we'd like to know. Matter of fact, it's probably the one book you'll ever pick up and read. It doesn't tell you a physical description of the main heroes. There's nothing in there that tells you what Jesus looked like, for instance. It doesn't tell you what anybody really looks like to a large extent. There's a few examples, such as height of some tall people and things of that nature. But it's very concise. Yet the story of Joseph occupies 14 chapters. Have you ever wondered why so much space is devoted to this one story? I think it's because God wants us to know some things out of it, and that's why we're studying it this morning. Only 12 chapters are devoted to the escape 400 years later from Egypt. And so that gives you some idea of the size of it. Another question we're going to explore this morning is, have you ever wondered why Joseph, when he became basically the second only to Pharaoh ruler, probably had a staff of his own to help him in his administrative duties, probably had chariots and horsemen at his command, why he never went down fairly good roads to see his folks? And why didn't he go home to see his father? You ever wonder why God chose those 10 cruel brothers to be the heads of the tribes of Israel? Everyone wonder why he chose those guys? I mean, there's probably a lot better people right here in this audience today than if I were choosing, I would pick instead of those guys. I mean, after all, they sold their brother into slavery. That's pretty bad. So let's explore those three questions in that order, if you will. God had talked to Abraham back in Genesis, the 15th chapter, verses 5 through 15. Genesis 15, 5 through 15. It says, and he brought him forth abroad and said, look now toward heaven and tell the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, so shall thy seed be. Talking to Abraham. And he believed in the Lord, and he counted it to him for righteousness. And he said to him, I am the Lord that brought thee out of Ur of the Chaldees to give thee this land to inherit it. And he said, Lord God, whereby shall I know that I shall inherit it? And he said unto him, take a heifer of 3 years old, and a she-goat of 3 years old, and a ram of 3 years old, and a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. And he took unto him all these, and divided them in the midst, and laid each piece one against another, but the birds divided he not. And when the fowls came down upon the carcass, Abram drove them away. And when the sun was gone down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and lo, an aura of great darkness fell upon him. And he said to Abram, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. And also that nation whom thou shalt serve will I judge, and afterward shall they come out with great abundance. And thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, and thou shalt be buried in a good old age. He's predicting basically the enslavement of of the children of Israel for 400 years. He's predicting the escape from Israel, the coming out of great abundance. And these things did in fact come to be. I said they were slaves for 400 years. God didn't tell them when they were going to be slaves, that did he? He just told them you're going to be slaves. It could have been in Assyria. It could have been anywhere. He said they're going to be freed. Abram, Ham lived the rest of his days in the land that we call Canaan. Isaac lived 180 years, and died in Canaan. Jacob, his son, who had lived in Aram of Syria, remember that's where their wives came from. He had lived in Canaan too with his 12 sons. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody told me that you're going to have to get up and move to Mongolia or the Czech Republic, I'd probably have second thoughts. Because I like the part of the country I live in. People speak the same language. We understand these laws and so forth. If they told me I had to go to a foreign land, I wouldn't want to do that. And so, these people had no idea that they'd ever end up in Egypt. That was probably the farthest thing from their mind. They had their goats and their cows and so forth. And they were happy in the land that they had. So what caused Jacob and his children and their children to pack up all the stuff they had and move to Egypt and become slaves for 400 years? Well, they didn't go down there with the idea of being slaves, but it turned out that way. The reason was that there was a great famine in the land. And it wasn't just in Canaan. It wasn't just in Egypt. It was a whole area. There was a famine. And that word means that they didn't have any crops. The stuff was not living the way it should be and producing the way it should be. All that whole region. At that point in time, Joseph was in Egypt. He was a high official. And there was plenty there because he had told them to store up the abundance of the 7 years. How did he get to be that position? How did Joseph get to be governor of all Egypt? Answerable only to Pharaoh. He had predicted that there would be 7 years of plenty. There would be 7 years of famine. And he told them to store up the stuff, to save it in the good years so that they'll have something to eat in the bad years. Pharaoh had the good sense to listen to what this man said. And they did in fact save of their good, their plenty, and stored it away. What a lot of people don't realize is in doing this, when the famine came, you wanted food from Pharaoh, you had to buy it. He didn't just give it to you. After a while, your money ran out. You sold him your land. After a while, that money ran out. Then you sold him yourself. So Pharaoh, through this deal, got quite wealthy. He basically owned the whole land at this point in time. Well, how did Joseph predict that there would be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine? Because he was able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams when nobody else could. He came in and told him that the fat cows and the good 7 good ears of corn predicted good years, big crops, abundance of crops. And the thin cows and the thin corn and so forth predicted 7 years of famine. And again, he told Pharaoh what this dream meant, and it did turn out that way. Well, how did he get the opportunity to do this to start with? You know, you don't just walk into Pharaoh and tell him a dream. Well, you remember the butler? Pharaoh had a dream, and he couldn't understand it. Nobody could tell him what it meant. The butler remembered that there was a fellow in prison that 2 years before had told him what his dreams were. And he told Pharaoh. And Pharaoh called this guy, Joseph, to come and tell him his dream. So Joseph, in essence, was stored away in prison waiting for the right time and the right moment for this to happen. The butler remembered his dreams being interpreted by Joseph. Remember, there's a baker there, too. Joseph interpreted his dreams, but his dreams were a bad dream. Now, we're talking about this butler, the baker, and Joseph being in prison. How did, you know, normally when you're in prison, you're either tied to a rock or something, or you're in a cell or something of that nature. Joseph had to run of the place. He was, today you'd call him a trustee, if you will. He is able to move about the prison because he has gained the confidence of the prison keeper. He was able to walk around. He was able to talk to anybody he wanted to that prison. He basically had charge of keeping all the prisoners. And he behaved himself and did a good job. But how did he come to be in prison? We're doing backwards in time, you see. How did he get in prison to start with? You remember that Joseph was a slave of Potiphar. Potiphar was a wealthy man, and Joseph served him well. And he served him so well that Potiphar made him the keeper of his house, his household, and everything in it. And thus Potiphar's wife had access to Joseph as well. Potiphar had put him in prison because Potiphar's wife had falsely said that Joseph had made advances toward her, when that was not true. Quite the opposite. You ever wonder, let me back up a little bit. That is a death sentence in Egypt. Potiphar could easily have just taken Joseph's head off of his shoulders at that point. Why did Potiphar not kill him? Perhaps Potiphar knew his wife and knew what kind of woman she was. And perhaps Potiphar knew what kind of man Joseph was. And Potiphar, I'm sure, knew the history of his wife, that she didn't always tell the truth, and she was not perhaps not always faithful. But here's a public accusation been made against a slave. He had to do something. He spared his life and put him in prison. Well, how did he get to be a slave of Potiphar? You remember that he had been sold in the slave market. If he had been sold one day earlier or one day later, Potiphar probably would never have been there. He came one day, bought a slave, and went home. That was Joseph. So Joseph had not been enslaved, if he had not been put in prison, if he had not interpreted the baker and the dreams of the butler and the baker, if he had not been able to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh, none of these things would have happened. But they happened in a very timely, orderly manner, in which everything just sort of fell in place. Why was he sold in slavery at the market to begin with? Remember, those slave traders came through. If they had been a half a day earlier or a half a day later, Joseph would never have been enslaved and sold to them. Just so happened they came along at the right time or the wrong time, depending on your viewpoint. Reuben would have set him free. You remember that? One brother spoke up for him, Reuben. How did he get in the pit to start with? Those 10 brothers saw him coming down to see him. They remembered he used his dreams to taunt them. They desired to kill him. Reuben, that same Reuben, talked them out of this. Don't kill him. And it's a good thing he didn't, or they didn't. Why were they jealous of Joseph? We already alluded to this earlier. He had dreams, and he used those dreams to taunt them, which he probably shouldn't have done. His father loved him more than he loved the other 10, to the point of giving him this coat of many colors. We as parents have to be careful how we treat our children and treat them the same, lest we can cause problems amongst our children. We have a chain of events here, is what I'm getting at. From the promise of Abraham some 200 years before, that he had enslaved them and so forth, and they later either come out with great abundance. This chain of events happened. It could not have happened if one of those things had not happened in the events in the order that it did. So why is so much material based on this? This story shows that God's will be done. God had told Abraham what's going to happen, and it did happen. There was only two miraculous events in this, and that was both involved interpreting of dreams. In every case, it was just natural things that happened. So happened in a certain sequence, in a certain time, in a certain place. Slavery was certainly not new in that day. It had been carried on for generations. So a man being sold into slavery was nothing new. All this stuff was natural. Being a house servant was nothing new. Being falsely accused happens today. There's a lot of people that are falsely accused of many things. It's easy to accuse somebody, hard to prove otherwise. Yet these things happen in a certain sequence, in a specific timing, to cause all this to happen. My point is, what God wants to happen is going to happen. And He uses, a lot of cases, natural things to cause these things to come about. Second question. Why didn't Joseph go see his family? Again, he was pretty high up in the organization. He had access to all the resources in Egypt. He could pretty much do anything he wanted to. He probably wouldn't even have had to ask Pharaoh's permission to go do it. He probably could have just gone and said, Pharaoh, I'll be gone a couple weeks, 3 weeks, I'll be back. And that'd been the end of it. Why didn't he do that? In order to understand that, you've got to somewhat put yourself in the position of Joseph. If the Bible doesn't tell you that, you've got to think about, why would he do that? You've got to see the situation through their eyes, their emotions, their likes, their dislikes, their prejudices, and their fears. Suppose you were a boy of 17 years old. And you were sent to see your 10 brothers. You find them. You expect a warm welcome, but you don't get it. Quite the contrary. They throw you into a pit. They tie you up. How do you feel about that? I wouldn't like it. I suspect none of us would. You think, well, this is a joke. This is a cruel hoax. After a while, they're going to pull me out where, you know, everything's going to be okay. A rope falls down. You think the joke's over. They're pulling and you're climbing out. You get to the top, there's strangers there, people you've never seen before. They're slave traders. You're led away. You get to the first hill. You look back and say, okay, it's time for this joke to be over with, guys. Y'all come get me. I've had enough. They're not coming after you. They may be even going the other way. You get to the next hill. You look back again. They're not coming. Miles and miles go by. You finally realize they're not coming after me. This is no joke. This is a real thing. I have been sold into slavery. I'm doomed. I'll never get home again my whole life. On and on you go. There's no rescue. You're lonely. You're desolate. You feel unwanted. Finally, you get to the slave market. Fortunately, you're sold to a man named Potiphar who treats you pretty well because you do a good job for him. But you're still a slave. You cannot leave. You're stuck. How do you feel towards your brothers? Would you want to go see your brothers? I've got cousins I don't want to go see. And they haven't sold me in slavery. How would you feel about those brothers? I don't think you'd want to spend any time with them at all. Could you bear the thought of even being around them anymore? What about your father? You loved your father. He's a wealthy man. He could have come to that slave auction and bought you just as well as Potiphar did. He could have come and bought you from Potiphar. He could have probably got you out of that jail. He didn't. Why didn't he come? Maybe he liked his riches better than you. He's got 11 other brothers, or kids back home. Maybe some girls thrown in. Maybe he don't care about you anymore. I mean, these sort of thoughts are probably what went through his mind. You're falsely accused. More time passes. 13 years go by, not one word from your family. Nobody comes to see you. Nobody comes to get you out. It'd been easier for his father to come by. His father was wealthy again. What are your feelings at this point in time? Well, we're not left totally in the dark about what his feelings are. The Bible tells us a couple of verses are very insightful, so we know what was going through his mind. In Genesis 41, verses 50 and 52, it talks about what happened to him later on. Genesis 41, 50 through 52 says, "Until Joseph was born two sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, the priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph named the name of the firstborn Manasseh, For God, said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. The memory of his 10 brothers was very bitter. And the father who did not try to redeem him was also bitter. He has these 2 sons. He's got a wife that loves him. I don't know if he had daughters or not. But finally, he has found peace in his life. He's forgotten all about that old life. It's done. It's gone. It's over with. He has no desire to return to Canaan and open up old wounds. A sense of relief, a sense of gladness, a sense of family, a sense of honor, a sense of worth, accomplishment were finally his after all these years. And he did not want to have any relationship with his family. There's no reason he could not. I mean, he wasn't in prison by that time. He was second only to Pharaoh. But there was no reason for him to go back, no desire for him to go back to Canaan. So that answers the second question. We said earlier that in the 7 years of plenty, they stored up in their storehouses the extra food. And that was smart. Because in the 7 years of famine, I mean, they were hungry. People were probably starving to death in parts of the world. He was in charge of the distribution of the food. I mean, you can't just open up the doors and let it all go and all be gone the first week. They basically rationed it out slowly through time so everybody would have plenty. Now, let's assume you're in Egypt and you've got plenty of food to eat. All your neighbors around are hungry. What are you going to do? You're going to go to Egypt and get some of it. You'll just, again, leave the grain bins open because it'll all be raided in just a short period of time. You had to go through Joseph if you wanted food. One day, his 10 brothers show up. They're getting hungry down there, up there in Cana. They didn't recognize him. He was a 17-year-old boy the last time they saw him. Now he's a grown man with a family. He's probably changed a good bit. I know I've changed, and we all changed for the most part. They didn't recognize him. A lot of times you don't recognize somebody simply because of the circumstances. I mean, you see somebody at Walmart, you may recognize them, but if you went to the governor's mansion and Jackson, you might not recognize him because you don't expect them to be there. They didn't recognize their brother. To him, it was a very painful surprise. Opened up old wounds. He determines to treat them rudely, which in his eyes they was justly deserved, and sent them away. He accused them of being spies. Again, in Egypt, if you're a spy, that's a death sentence. Totally justifiable to kill them at that point. How did they respond? They said in Genesis 42, verse 13, thy servants are 12 brethren, the sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. This probably reminded him that he still has a full brother back in the land of Canaan. He's got 10 half-brothers, but he's got one full brother, Benjamin. Reading a little further in that chapter, verses 14 through 20 of Genesis 42. And Joseph said unto them, this is that I spake unto you, saying, ye are spies. Hereby you shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh you shall not go from hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch his brother, or your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. And he put them all together in war 3 days. And Joseph said unto them the 3rd day, this do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine to your houses, but bring your youngest brethren to me. So shall your words be verified, and you shall not die. And they did so. At this they began to talk amongst themselves, saying that the selling of Joseph was the cause of all this trouble they're in now. Then the oldest Reuben said something that must have really startled Joseph. In chapter 42, verses 22 through 24, it says, Reuben answered them, saying, Spake not I unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child? And you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. And he turned himself about from them and wept, and returned to them again, and communed with them, and took from them Simeon, and bound him before their eyes. For the first time, Joseph knows that not all 10 brothers wanted to kill him. Not all 10 brothers wanted to put him in slavery either. That one of the brothers meant him no harm, tried to even help him, but to no avail. This greatly moved him. He cried. He didn't let them see it, but he cried. This is how it touched him. He was overcome by emotion. Now he knows he's got a little brother, Benjamin, and he knows that Reuben tried to help him. So he's got two brothers that care about him. I wondered why he didn't keep Reuben. He's the oldest. He's the one that tried to help him. If it had been me, I'd have tried to keep Reuben. And after they left, I'd talk to Reuben and we'd made amends. He didn't do that. He chose Simeon instead. I don't know why. Joseph tells the steward to put their money back in their grain bags, which he does. Back in Canaan, Jacob is not willing to let Benjamin go. I mean, he's lost one son. He doesn't want to lose another. Time passes. They get hungry again. I mean, the famine's still going on. Reuben and Judah promise Benjamin's safety. The 10 brothers, the 9 bad guys and Benjamin, that's 8 bad guys, Reuben and Benjamin, head out to Egypt. Simeon's still there, remember? When Joseph sees Benjamin, he's in, again overcome. He turns away and cries again. His plan is almost complete. He wants to have Benjamin there with him and send the others packing. He invites them to a meal. This is astonishing. This is not done in Egypt. You don't have a high official meeting with foreigners to eat a meal. These are nobodies. These are herdsmen. These are not high officials from some other kingdom or something of that nature. It isn't done. They're looked down upon. But he had his cup put in Benjamin's sack and lets him start home. The steward catches up with him and finds the sack, sure enough, in Benjamin's bag, and he's framed as a thief at this point. The brothers are very sorrowful. They're in their clothes. The steward returns Benjamin to Joseph. Joseph expects to see the steward and Joseph only, but look around, there are the other 10 brothers with him. They fall down before Joseph, just as his dreams had foretold, and they say that they will be his slaves, only let poor Benjamin go. Joseph refuses and tells him to return. He's planned to success. He's got Benjamin with him. Judah begs to speak. He tells us of his first visit and his conversation with Jacob in chapter 44, verses 27 through 29. It says, Thy servant, my father, said unto us, You know that my wife bare me 2 sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, Surely he is torn to pieces, and I saw him not since. And if you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, you shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. In other words, go kill him if this son Benjamin, anything happens to him. Can you imagine Joseph hearing this? His father thinks he's dead. That's why his father never came to redeem him. That's why he didn't come and take him back to Cana. And Joseph understands now why his father never tried to redeem him. Judah keeps on speaking in verses 30 through 33 of chapter 44. Now therefore, when I came to my servant, my father, and the lad was not, be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass, when he seeth the lad is not with us, he will die. And thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant, our father, with sorrows to the grave. For thy servant, Judah, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, If I bring him not to thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore, I pray thee, Let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondsman to my lord, and let the lad go with his brother. Judah is volunteering to be a slave, just so Benjamin can go home and not have his father die of grief. The very man who had sold Joseph into slavery is willing now to become a slave himself to help his little brother, Benjamin. What a change in these men. They were cruel, they were hard in their youth. They're no longer that way. They care about their father. They care about what will happen to him. They care about Benjamin. Joseph can no longer restrain himself at this point. He cries in their presence. It says in chapter 45, verses 4 through 10, "And Joseph said unto his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that you saw me hither. For God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither by God, and you have made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Haste ye, and go to my father, and say unto him, Thus saith thy son Joseph, God hath made me lord of all Egypt. Come down unto me, tarry not, and ye shall dwell in the land of Goshen, and ye shall be near to me, and thou, and thy children, and thy children's children, and thy flocks, and thy herds, and all that thou hast." I asked at the beginning of this lesson, why did God choose these 10 cruel brothers to be heads of families? The answer is God did not choose those 10 cruel brothers to be heads of his families. Instead, God chose these 10 men who had changed their lives to the point they cared about their father, they cared about their brother. They were no longer the cruel men that they started out with. They were not the original men that we saw in our study earlier. Few people would do what they were offering. They were offering to become slaves themselves to make sure that Benjamin got home safely. For 22 long years, they had lived with the guilt of what they had done to one brother, and they did not want to see any harm come to the other one. They had enough of that. They had learned their lesson. They could not bear to tell anybody the truth. They lived with this burden all these 22 years. Again, these 10 men were not the original 10 men because they had changed. They had changed for the better. And the same thing is true today for us. God doesn't want us in our old sinful lives. He doesn't want us to be the type of people that we were before we knew Christ. He will not save us in that condition, but He wants us to be changed. He wants us to repent. He wants us to become, as these 10 men, caring about others, caring about what's right and doing what's right in God's sight. We start out with 3 questions. Why was so much space given to the story of Joseph in the Bible? To show that God can make things happen the way He wants them to happen. And God is carrying out what He told Abraham would happen. We couldn't see all the details in the narrative to Abraham, but we see it in the story of Joseph and what happened to the children of Israel after that. Why did Joseph not go home the 200 miles or so to visit his family? He didn't know one that Reuben had tried to help him. He did not know his father thought he was dead. Had he known these things, perhaps he might have tried. And why did God choose these 10 cruel men to lead his people, at least a portion of them? God did not choose those cruel men. He chose men who had repented of their past and did not want to have any part of that again. These were brothers who had turned and changed their ways. That, I think, is the lessons to be learned from this story in the Old Testament. Again, this lesson of the morning is not to tell you how to become a Christian or stay a Christian, how to repent if you've strayed away or anything of that nature. If you've been taught how to become a Christian and you want to do that today, we stand ready to assist you in any way.